There are so many things I could say about George. Some are obvious, that he was a great medical man, a loyal friend, a wonderful father to Sybil, Ivor and myself, and husband to his dear Maura. And yes, he was all of those things. But he was a lot more besides. He was a fencer, a swimmer, a chess player, a pianist, a poet and a poker player. And yes, he always had a love of really corny jokes. We have years and years of happy memories with Dad, for which we are so thankful. And we want to remember him not as he was during these last 2 years of cruel illness, which often made him frustratingly difficult to reach or comfort, but as he was in those happier times. And we'd like to share a few of his poems. And around the dear ruin, each wish of my heart would entwine itself verdantly still.
The first poem was all written a considerable time ago, in fact. I'm quite sure it was when I was little more than a boy. When I was little more than a boy, it was a very considerable time ago. Actually, it was certainly in the 1940s. When I had been hazarded by the Jesuit fathers, and I became a good fellow. I became a good, well-behaved little boy. That's why I wrote Resurrection. But the purpose of writing poetry, of course, too. But it was a poem in Cork for which you got, I think, £50. So I was quite pleased for that too. Resurrection is the title. Still dark cloud of death hangs quiet above upon Jerusalem all the night. A thousand suns bear not the power, light one fragment of this hour of degradation, fear and lies. Prostrate on the hill above lies all glory, hope and love. Maternal anguish cries aloud, consigns humanity to the shroud with tender, helping hands and sighs. The rumble of the closing tomb resembles not the sound of doom. The prisoners who cannot see the open gates, for ours we, the jailers of our souls, but on the road to Emmaus shines the light of lights. The dark confines of prison house are shattered wide for love and justice side by side to enter and console. Then, sounding on the Easter morn, the happy voice of mankind born upon the wings of freedom sings a greeting to the King of Kings. The Son of Man again is born. This is a private poem to the lady who has been my wife for a considerable time. I cannot disclose the exact number of years because she doesn't permit this. And unfortunately, on presenting these figures to a barrister of mine, he's gone, poor Pat Ogden, last year, he said our marriage was illegal. As my wife was only 14 years old when we got married. But here's the poem. The poem is to Maura, my wife. The summer's day, gold autumn tree, blue skies of heaven, sunlit sea, all fade from vision and unite as nothing when compared to thee. Your face at morn, your loving eyes, touch your hand, sweet paradise is where I live when I'm at home with thee. Oh, could our sweet eternal way go on forever, day by day? Love without end, I apprehend, when you are here with me. If our serene and tranquil life could lead into eternity. I'd walk and talk to you, dear wife, and look at nothing else but thee. Poet sing of Samarkand and mystic dreams and golden sand. My dream is walking hand in hand, just you, my love, and me. Neil O'Doherty, he was an extraordinarily odd fellow. At Temple Street Hospital, yes. Saw him quite often. But he almost never saw me, and that's just an extraordinary case. You see only once in about 5 years. This is entitled The Professor's Dream. And it's to Neil, my old friend. Among the rumpled sheets he lay, his brows moist with sweat, as he saw in tortured dreams of day the little children he had met. Some had one nose, some had two. 12 fingers here, an extra toe, one eye green, the other blue, and strange things grew down there below. The visions rained down like confetti, Clipper File, Hal Vorden's Bats, Hoffman Strauss, Frank Shetty, tails like dogs and heads like cats. Other account syndromes. Hampshire Christian, Marfan, Downs, laughing at his disarray, danced round his bed like little clowns, driving reason far away. They brought him one to calm his slumbers, and near each side his little head, 10 fingers, toes of normal number, a central nose, gold hair and head, a brow as fine as Coriolanus, a torso of proportion size, 2 testicles, a patent anus, shapely head, and clear blue eyes. Oh, what is this, and what is this here? He must names of long dead men, and he thrust himself for fear. And we said he'll ne'er be seen again. Sturge Weber, Lord Burke, he cried, come to aid me in my pain. This vision strange, at my bedside, never let me see again. Our little jest had gone astew. Oh, listen to his strange wild scream. We never should have let him view an entirely normal human being. When I think of Sir William Wilde, found in the Eye and Ear Hospital an awful long time ago. Yeah, it was 100 years ago, I think, last 1997, yeah. I was at the centenary. So William Wilde came over, you know, and he did a lot of work here, and there was no throat and eye surgery, and he formed a hospital at Lincoln Place, then down there, Mulzer Street, that's where the Masons are. And then he bought that site at Adelaide Road and set up a hospital, which of course is listed. And it's a magnificent building, and I found it very good. So I wrote this poem titled The Eye and Ear Hospital, a benediction. Walked down some quiet evening by those graceful towers on Adelaide Road and pondered life's demands. Think of those graceful callers at all hours, who found there friendly voices, helping hands. Some feared for sight and came in desolation. Many with failing health were near despair. But always they found hope and consolation at Dublin's Royal Victoria Eye and Ear. The academic life within those halls draws seekers of truth from many lands, from far off nations. Within those walls learn skill and knowledge for their healing hands. Such names as Wilde, that's Oscar's father, and Swansea, Mooney, Curtin, Werner, Graham, O'Connell, and the rest. Lend an atmosphere of dedication, certain, to keep their memories alive, their labours blessed. And over all, this glorious history rules a council whose services are sublime. And as another century approaches, we thank them for the fortunes of our time. For now 100 years of peerless reign, of almost endless nights and countless days, they will hopefully continue to maintain as our grateful anthem swells the note of praise. Too many names crowd on to record and bless each one, to tell unique and individual story. No matter now, their work is still being done. Be proud of the past, look on to future glory. It's a very good place. Vern, Frank, and all these, they did so much work and gave so much money into it. No payments to Ensman. Now, this is a tavern, and that's a translation up there of the Omar Khayyam, not direct, it's what's his name, Fitzgerald, who translated from him. I saw one these days when I was in the pub, and I decided to put some of that. And this is called The Tavern. And it's a first of public house, which I must not disclose, of which I must not disclose the name as yet. At the heady was the tavern. As much as wine has played the infidel and robbed me of my robe of honour, well, I often wonder what the vintners buy that's half so precious as good as they sell. That was the ruby out of Omar Khayyam. So one day our editor saw myself sitting there. The city sounds grow quiet with the eve, and then the weary workers make their way to a quiet inn where early drinks will leave and wash away the stresses of the day. The staff are working now like busy bees, and sounds of merriment soon fill the air. As customers sit back and take their ease, and pints and small ones fill, then disappear. Now the landlord speaks, hears the call to prayer, and quickly comes his thirsty guests to greet. His voice rings with a Londonderry air as he helps to make their happiness complete. He's from Londonderry, Barney Lusky. Yes. Oh, the ministers are there, and they've all been there since 30 years, the four people. The ministers who serve this jolly clutch, Tom, Liam, Mark, St. Brian, and all the rest, that's his son. My lovely Lisa lends a woman's touch, are busy now and giving of their best. Yeah. Brian is his son, not St. Brian. But he loves that. His voice rings in Derry. He has an organ voice still. You'll find this haven underneath a clock. close by the pleasant lawns of Harrow Park. Not many minutes' walk from Dark Rock, the stained glass doorway gleaming after dark. As Omar said, whether the one true light kindled to love or wrath consumed me quite, one glimpse of it within the tavern caught better than the temple lost outright.
What I'll both remember best and miss most about Dad is how uncomplicated and strong his love for us and belief in each of us was. He was so proud of us. He'd write us poems. For me, it was The Messenger. For Hilary, The Lady of Portobello. And every few months, he'd carefully type on a proper old typewriter his mantra. That was everything in moderation. The list went something like this. Never smoke. Get plenty of sleep. Stick to a healthy diet and take plenty of exercise. And finally, there were the birthday and Christmas cards he'd send each of us. Dad would find the gaudiest, tackiest, least appropriate card and then turn it into something really special, with a little pencil drawing added there or a witty word inserted here. We'll really miss you, Dad.
As we just say, thank you so much for all of you who've made the effort to come along. It's never easy. We all have other lives going on during the day. I do appreciate all of you who've made the time to come and pay respects to my dad. As you know, he was quite a private man in one way. He wasn't a big party goer, as has been said, but he did like an occasion. He liked a social occasion. I think he would be chuffed to see the number of people who were here. Those who came to pay their respects. Some of you may know there was a bit of a debate in the family about whether we would strictly adhere to his wishes about the funeral, which was, put me in a box, I don't want anybody in the church, don't put a notice in the paper, I just want to be over and done with very quickly, no ceremony, no fuss. But we felt that, and certainly I felt, that the whole funeral process, there is a grieving process there, and I felt it was important we went through that, and especially for my mum as well, to see the support. Because as you know, over the last year we've had a difficult time with Dad, he hasn't been well, and you know, he found it very difficult, he wasn't happy. And for us, we need to remember back to a time before that when he was a happy man and we had a lot of happy times and he had times with his relatives and his friends. And I think that's why it's important to have the funeral process, to have people around us and to hear the anecdotes we've heard today and see the people who turned up. My mum was just amazed by the number of people who appeared, and from all walks of life, from being connected with Dad, from being connected with me, with Sybil and with Hilary as well. And it's just so nice to have that and have people come up to you and shake your hand and say, I remember your dad and I remember he was a good guy. So I'd ask all of you, some of you seen him more recently and you know he wasn't in the best of health, just take a memory from before that time and keep that in your mind, because that's how he was, whether it's as a friend, as a colleague in the hospitals, as a relative, as an uncle, whatever, or as we said, a terror of really, really bad jokes. if you can hang on to that as well, I think that's important. So remember as he was, he had a very good life. I've been banned by my mother saying words like he had a good innings or he lived to a ripe old age. So I won't say that, but he did. He lived the way he wanted to live, and he had the opportunities to do what he wanted to do, and he did quite a lot in his life. In later years, he had a set pattern. He had his nice walk by the South Wall. He had his drinking McCluskey's with all his friends. Some of them were here today. So to see, and that was what he wanted to do. And he did live for his family as well. He lived for the visits that we made. It was always quite funny because I'd come over for a weekend. I'd arrive in on Friday night. I'd say, oh, it's great to see you, son. When are you leaving? But that was Dad. It was just more about setting things in time. He wanted to know, right, how long are you going to be here for? How long are you going to be for? Sort of thing. And he didn't want to do lots of things. He didn't want to go out and party all night long, but usually go down to Max for a drink or whatever with him. But he liked having his family around. He liked knowing we were there. He liked knowing what we were doing. And he loved that connection with all of us. And I think he'd be very proud of his grandchildren here today as well. It's nice to see them and the way they've turned out. I suppose I should claim some credit for my two. So that was it really. I won't tell you any of his really bad jokes because I wouldn't make good of him at the time. I will tell you an anecdote actually. As he got frailer, he used to revert to sort of similar.
Ira, darling, sorry to interrupt you. Do you raise your voice just a little?
Sorry?
Can you read out more? Just a little recounting.
Okay. No, no. You've heard this one before, anyway, Mum. So, as he got older and frailer, he used to tell pretty much the same anecdotes again and again, which is quite handy because as his voice faded, you could pick up certain words. But I knew what he was saying by certain words in the sentence, so it was really handy for me. And there's one particular anecdote he used to tell about some years ago. He was coming out of a Dublin hostelry and he had a bit of a bunk in his car with another motorist, and the guards were called and names and addresses were exchanged, and the young guard that he was dealing with looked at his licence and looked at the doctor's badge on the car and says, "Oh, Dr. Fallon, Dr. Fallon, right, I think you treated my mum last year, you cracked your ear, you're a very good man, on you go, we'll sort this out for you." So Dad went home, I thought, great, nice. Scored there. He went to the hospital the next day and checked the records. It was actually a colleague of his, Eric Fenlon, who treated the mother, but that didn't tell us. That's kind of how was, yeah. But did follow around. So if I could ask you to raise your glasses and just toast George or Dad, whatever you want to call
him. George.
Cheers.
Them out in the darkness, my lost love.